Early in the COVID-19 pandemic, when patient visits had all but dried up, many medical practices were wondering how they would survive. But now, with patient visits rebounding and development of a COVID-19 vaccine on the horizon, there's reason to hope that practices can start focusing in on long-term growth strategies. But how should a practice go about financing that growth, such as getting a bank loan or a line of credit? And what are the pitfalls to look for when invited, and what are pitfalls to avoid when looking for outside sources of funds? My guest today has nearly 30 years experience helping practice answer questions such as these. She is Julianne Andrews, a principal of Atlanta Financial Associates. Since co-founding Atlanta Financial in 1992, Julianne has counseled thousands of physicians and medical practices on personal and professional financial issues. Since 2017, she has been featured on the Forbes Honor Roll for Women. She's been quoted in a wide range of financial and professional publications and is a longtime contributor to Medical Economics and its sister publication, Physicians Practice. Welcome, Julianne, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let me start by asking, where can practices go to obtain a loan or other types of financing? Is it banks? Is it venture capitalists? The Small Business Administration? And what are the advantages and drawbacks to each source?
Well, right now, there are actually a wide array of options for medical practices to look at. Historically, banks have been a very good source of funding for medical practices. You do need to be aware of the fact that typically with medical practices, even large medical practices, if you do obtain bank financing, they're likely going to want a personal guarantee from the partners of the firm, which just simply means that the bank is loaning the money to the practice, but each one of the partners are personally guaranteed it will be responsible personally if the practice was unable to repay it. The SBA really works through SBA-approved lenders, which are banks, and what they do then is they guarantee loans that are made under that program through those banks. So many times, if you qualify for an SBA loan, the loan rate, interest rate might be a little bit lower because the bank has a guarantee, a backstop from the SBA on that loan. So the terms might be a little bit better. So it's certainly something to investigate. Some practices now are turning to venture capital and private equity as funding sources, although typically that kind of funding is used, generally speaking, if a practice is looking to sell outright. However, sometimes it is used for funding for capital for various reasons. You do need to understand that in the case of venture capital or private equity, you're giving up something in control in exchange for that. So for instance, with venture capital, you're probably giving up seats on the board, those kinds of things, some decision-making power. Private equity, you're probably giving up some equity. You've sold some equity in your firm in exchange for that funding. But those are options now, and those types of entities are actually very interested in medical practices at this point.
It would seem to me that a practice would be very reluctant to give up the kind of power or control that would come with private equity or venture capital. What are the advantages over a conventional bank loan?
Well, you know, it's usually an entirely different kind of a transaction. Many times, for instance, private equity or venture capital firms are interested in practices that have good, solid cash flow, that are growing, and that's actually what they're interested in purchasing. It can work very well for a practice that has older physicians that are looking to retire and are looking for some sort of a succession strategy. It can also work, for instance, for younger physicians who are looking to become part of a larger group and aren't really interested in the administrative part of running a practice that many people in private practice have to contend with. So sometimes for younger partners, that's a very attractive opportunity, but it's a very different thing than just getting a loan to refurbish your office or buy a new piece of equipment. It's a completely different transaction.
Under what circumstances should a medical practice or an existing practice consider going outside, getting a loan, rather than trying to finance growth through its own revenues?
Well, you can look at it kind of like you would look at a personal purchase. Should I pay for the car or should I take a loan on it? Really, what you want to look at is what kind of cash flow do you have and how large is this purchase compared to the cash flow that you have on hand and also compared to the cash that the practice might have in the bank. Right now, interest rates are extremely low. They are projected to stay low for quite a while. The Fed has been extraordinarily accommodative, and that looks to be the case for the time being. So getting a loan for things for large purchases, like equipment purchases, again, office refurbishing, that kind of thing makes a lot of sense. But you need to make sure that you are have enough free cash flow to service that loan if you do decide to take that down. Because again, you probably will have to personally guarantee it if you get a loan from the bank.
Going back to the terms of a bank loan, partners are personally on the hook for it and could lose their own assets if they default on it?
Typically what happens, and I work with some smaller practices and some extremely large practices, generally speaking, banks are going to require physicians to personally guarantee loans. So what's going to happen is they're going to make the loan based on the cash flow and the financial well-being of the practice. They're also going to ask for personal guarantees for the partners. What that's going to mean are things like the partners are going to have to provide things like tax returns, personal balance sheets, that kind of thing, in order to demonstrate that should the practice default on a loan, that the partners would have the capital to take care of it. Now, banks, you know, it's not their objective to foreclose on a loan. They want to work out terms, so they'll be very they'll be very accommodative, typically working with practices on working out terms of loans. And you saw that happening earlier in the year when we had the downturn in revenue from COVID. They'll work with practices to work that out. So it would be highly unusual. In fact, in 30 years, I've never seen a physician have to rely on a personal guarantee in order to pay off a practice loan. But generally speaking, that is the case. And it's not unusual. It would be the case for most small business owners who would typically have to personally guarantee a loan for their business. So it's not just the medical community.
Are they required to put up collateral of some kind? And what kind of documentation do banks require when you apply for a loan?
Typically, they're not going to require collateral, but most loans are made on a cash flow basis. So they're going to look at the cash flow of the practice, their historical revenues and receipts, along with their expenses, to make sure there's free cash flow to pay the loan. They're going to want to see practice tax returns, for instance, that kind of thing. Practices work with accountants. They're going to ask for historical profit and loss statements and balance sheets, usually going back 2 or 3 years, just to make sure there's a consistent history of good cash flow. So that is typically the case. On the personal guarantee side, usually they will require a personal balance sheet, certified by the physician that this is an accurate reflection of their personal statement, and then sometimes a tax return from that physician.
Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of documentation that a doctor would need to have with them or be prepared to turn over when applying for a loan.
Yes.
Okay.
And again, this is not different from any other kind of small business. Any kind of small business is going to have to provide that sort of documentation.
What about lines of credit? When should a practice consider getting one of those, and what should it be used for?
So this is something that I actually think practices should do preemptively. Every small business, medical practices or small business, should have some sort of a working capital line of credit. And by that, I mean, just have a line of credit sitting out there. You do not need to use it, but it's always good to get a line of credit when you don't need it. When you need it, you're going to have more difficulty procuring it. So go ahead and put a line of credit in place, determine what amount you need, maybe 3 to 6 months of expenses of the practice. It can sit out there unused, and that's terrific if you don't need to use it. But if you run across a downturn, and again, I'll go back to the downturn that happened earlier with COVID, and your practice revenues are down, you have that to fall back on. What you have to be careful of is not using the line of credit just sort of as a mechanism to spend more money than the practice can really afford. So the line of credit should be used only for temporary shortfalls and then paid back immediately. So something like an extraordinary event like COVID, or we're going to refurbish our office, we need $50,000, let's pull it off the line of credit, we'll agree as a partnership to pay it back over 3 or 6 months, that kind of thing. But you don't want to just have a continually increasing line of credit. And that means that you're overspending.
Were you seeing clients having to rely on lines of credit at the start of the pandemic just to stay afloat financially?
They did. And those that had lines of credit, it was very, very beneficial. Many of the practices that I work with took out PPP loans. That was an unusual event, but those PPP loans were not available immediately. You know, Congress had to pass the legislation to put the PPP loans in place. You had to apply for the PPP loan through, again, one of the SBA-approved lenders. So if you did not have a relationship with a bank that wasn't SBA-approved a lender, that was another hurdle to jump through, and it took a while. So typically for most practices, it took 3 to 4 weeks, sometimes longer than that, to actually get those funds in place. In the meantime, for many practices, their revenues just dropped precipitously. You know, if you had if you were an internist or a pediatrician, nobody's coming into your office for well checkups in the middle of all that. If you are a surgeon, the surgeries pretty much came to a halt unless it was an emergency. So revenues dried up, but you want to retain your staff. You've got really good staff. You've got medical professionals on staff. You have all your back office folks. You want to hold on to them. And of course, you have leases on your office space and that kind of thing. And so you continue to have those expenses. So, the firms I worked with did get PPP loans for the most part. Most of those will be forgivable, which is terrific. But initially, they needed that line of credit just to tide them over until they got those funds from the government.
Is there a difference between a line of credit and a revolving line of credit? I've seen the term used. Are they interchangeable?
They can be. They can be a little bit different. So revolving line of credit was what I was talking about earlier. You just have it in place. You use it if you need it. You pay it back off. Let's say you have a $200,000 line of credit. You use $50,000. You pay it off. Now you have a $200,000 line of credit. It just kind of stays out there. Usually there's a term involved, and typically banks are going to renew periodically because they're going to want to go back and look at your income statements and your balance sheets and make sure that you're still able to pay off the line of credit if you pull it down. But that would be what's called a revolving line of credit. It just stays out there. Sometimes practices will have a line of credit, and a line of credit is really typically more for a special purpose kind of a thing. So let's say, for instance, a practice decides we are going to reconfigure and refurbish one of our offices, and we need $100,000 for that. You would go to the bank, you would get a line of credit for $100,000. You would pull it down as you are doing this project. Once the project is complete, let's say you paid $95,000 for the refurbishing, that line of credit would then term out, and it would turn into a regular loan with a certain payment period. Let's say it converts to a 5-year loan with a certain interest rate, and then the practice is just paying that out over that 5-year period of time. But that line of credit would have gone away.
Is there an advantage to using that approach over just getting a loan right from the start?
It usually, the advantage is twofold. First of all, sometimes with projects like that, you don't know exactly what the ultimate cost is going to be. So, you're not really sure. So, that gives you a little more flexibility. You're also, on those kinds of situations, only paying interest on what you've already drawn down. So if it's a 6-month or 12-month project, you're only paying interest on whatever you pull down, and then it terms out. So a lot of times that can be preferable. Now, it depends on the negotiation up front, because banks may or may not be willing to set the terms of the ultimate loan 6 or 12 months out. So if you can't get them to agree to a specific 5 years of this interest rate kind of a term, you might be better off just saying, okay, then just go ahead and this is the project. Just go ahead and loan us $100,000 and let's set the terms right now. So it just depends on what you're able to work out with the bank.
Mm-hmm. Are there common mistakes you see when practices go outside for financing, whether it be a loan or a line of credit or anything else?
I think the primary thing you see that gets practices into trouble, and this would be very similar to, again, a personal situation, would be just taking on too much debt. If a practice is growing rapidly and they're opening new offices and they're purchasing equipment, and that means that they're also hiring employees and they're expanding their staff, that's all great. But a lot of times what happens with that is there's a lot of debt taken on to do all those things, because you don't yet have the revenue in those new offices with that new equipment to pay for all this. So, typically what you'll see is if you have a situation where a practice is growing rapidly and they're using a lot of debt to do that, and they don't have the revenue yet to pay the debt, and then you have a downturn. And I go back to earlier this year, or you just have a slowdown. Something happens. Or one of the physicians becomes disabled. Any of those things can really put a dent in what you were expecting the revenue stream to be, and that's where you end up having a problem. So, getting out over your skis with too much debt, which typically happens when a practice is trying to grow really rapidly, is a problem that I see happening from time to time. Usually it works out, because usually people don't die or become disabled. Usually we don't have a pandemic, but sometimes that happens. And when that happens, it can be a real problem.
And I suppose that's why they have people like you.
Right. Exactly. Because the other option you can do is you can always pay out of cash flow. Now, for physicians, there's a problem with this is if you're paying out of cash flow, it's really coming out of their income. And so, you know, that's the trade-off. You know, there are other things that the practices can look at. They can, reduce their the partner's incomes, you know, for a certain period of time and pay more of it out of cash flow. Practices are generally speaking very, very good at funding retirement plans and those kinds of things for the partners and also the employees. I've seen sometimes them slow down on things like that to try when they're in a rapid growth mode, that sort of thing. But it's a combination of those things that you want to look at. You don't want to get too much debt and really put your practice in peril if something unexpected happens.
What's been the impact of the pandemic in terms of practice financing? Have banks been more reluctant to make loans? You already mentioned that a lot more practices were turning to their lines of credit to stay in business, but overall, what's been the impact? Or has there been any?
The situation for many medical practices was very dire initially because their revenue stream really, again, almost went to zero. And the expenses that they have are not variable, they're fixed. It's basically their staff and their equipment and their offices. And those are all fixed expenses. So, it was a very difficult point in time. Most practices typically do not keep a lot of cash on hand. You know, it's kind of a revenue in, revenue out kind of a thing. So, you know, they collect revenues, they pay their staff, they pay their overhead, they pay the physicians every quarter. Most practices will bonus out most of what they have on cash they have on hand. And so something like that really, really caught them unaware. That is actually why banks do ask for personal guarantees. But it's also why, when the situation reversed itself, most of the practices I work with actually have had really great revenue since then because these things that were put off, like the wealth visits that didn't happen and the routine surgeries that didn't happen, all are happening now. And so what happened was, although their revenue dried up for a period of time, their revenue has really accelerated now towards the end of the year. So, banks, again, will typically work with practices. They're not looking to foreclose on loans. They're looking to work out payment terms. And most of these relationships have been longstanding and they've worked with practices for a long time. And they do have the personal guarantees. But I will say that for many practices, those PPP loans, really, you don't think about PPP loans in terms of medical practices. You think about it in terms of maybe a restaurant or a retail shop. But really, those PPP loans were really critical for medical practices earlier this year.
Yeah, we've heard that from a number of practices, actually, that the PPE loans helped them, were the difference between staying in business and not.
I had clients who were physicians who literally said, I never thought this could happen, but I think I might have to close my practice. I mean, it was a gut-wrenching thing to watch them go through. And so it was, and the process of getting the PPP loan was difficult and stressful, but it worked out. So I think now that they're on the other side of it, that's great. But it does, going back, it does kind of highlight the fact that that's why you should have these kind of safety nets, like a line of credit that you're not using, in place before any of this happens, because you just never know what's going to happen.
So far, we've been talking about existing practices. What about new practices? Where can a doctor or a group of doctors go to get money to start a practice, you know, if they don't have a credit history? What do banks do in that case?
Well, you know, typically what's going to happen in that case is the bank is going to be looking more at the individual than anything else, because what's going to happen is there's not going to be any kind of profit and loss statement or balance sheet, no historical revenues to speak of. So it's going to be based more on a personal loan. Now, many banks do have specific areas that deal with medical practices and physicians, whether they'll give them favorable terms, because if you've got somebody starting a new practice, you're going to feel pretty good as a bank that this is going to be a viable entity. And so, many times they'll make loans to startup medical practices that might not be available to other kinds of businesses. However, I have seen situations where physicians have started up medical practices and they've literally used things like home equity lines of credit and things like that. Now, this is very risky because now this is really your own personal financial, you're putting at stake. But, it's going to typically be a combination of your own personal capital, your own personal lines of credit, and lines of credit that you can obtain from the bank. And again, usually banks are a little more willing to loan to physicians just because the track record that they have with other medical practices is quite good.
I know a decision that practices often have to face comes when they want to acquire new equipment because medical equipment is typically very expensive. And then they have the option of buying it outright or leasing it. What do you see as the advantages and drawbacks of each?
So this is really it's a key decision that many practices face, particularly practices that have a lot of equipment, surgical practices, that kind of thing, expensive equipment. And you really want to look at it. It's kind of almost like the decision of buying versus leasing a car. If this is a piece of equipment that you're going to need to be changing out every 2, 3, 4 years, just simply because technology is changing, you're probably going to want to lease it because buying it's going to be cost prohibitive. If, on the other hand, this is a piece of equipment that you're going to purchase, it's a piece of lab equipment, you think you're going to be able to use it for 5, 8, 10 years, you probably want to buy it. Buying it can be done either outright with cash, or you can get a loan to buy it. Just go to the bank and say, we want to buy this piece of lab equipment, and so you just get a loan for that. The advantages of buying it would be that typically the terms are going to be a little bit better. Eventually, you will have paid off the loan. You won't have any more payments for it, and you own the piece of equipment, so the practice can depreciate it, which is a tax advantage. If you're leasing, you're always going to have payments. The payments never go away. However, if you're changing that equipment every 3 or 4 years, you probably want to lease because that's going to end up being less costly than trying to buy a new piece of equipment every 3 or 4 years.
And typically, is that leasing done directly from the manufacturer?
Typically through the manufacturer. So, for instance, if you're looking at a piece of equipment, either the manufacturer will do the lease themselves, or they'll have some sort of a financing arm that they'll refer you to that would do the lease for the practice. And the lease is going to have an interest rate associated with it, a term associated with it, a terminal value associated with it. And so, a practice might want to pull in a financial advisor to say, okay, look, if I lease this piece of equipment, this is what this is going to look like. If we buy it, this is what the bank's telling me. What do you think we should do? And as a financial advisor, we can trade off those things and see which would make the most sense. Because there are some tax advantages to both that you want to trade off.
Are any of those terms open to negotiation?
They can be open to negotiation, particularly on the purchase side. Depending on your credit history with the bank, if you have a good relationship with the bank and other loans, that kind of thing, you can certainly negotiate that. Leases tend to be a little bit less so, but there certainly can be a little bit of room there to negotiate some better terms, depending on the size of the practice and the size and the amount of equipment that's being leased.
At the beginning of our conversation, we talked a little bit about private equity and venture capital firms. Why are, and I know that they are showing increased interest in medical practices. Why is that? And what should a practice think about when considering whether to get funding or even sell itself to a venture capital firm?
It's interesting. Private equity firms, venture capital firms business model is that they are going to invest in a firm. They are going to try to grow that firm, make that firm more profitable. Then they will divest themselves of that investment, typically to another private equity firm or another venture capital firm. The firm, on the other hand, then the medical practice is using that money again to grow, to do some other things. So the reason that there's increased interest in medical practices you know, I think it's because it really certainty of cash flow. Medical practices traditionally, with set aside earlier this year, have had very, very predictable cash flow and have had very, very, you know, they typically have long tenured employees. And so it's a business that you can look at and really kind of rely on the cash flow. And that is very attractive to a private equity firm that is basing their decision making on really on cash flow. So they're looking for practices with good free cash flow. They're looking for practices that are growing. And they're looking for practices where they feel like they can inject some additional capital, help them grow faster, and then frankly turn their investment and make some money. And another private equity firm would come into play.
Okay. Well, great. I think this our audience will find this very useful. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us.
Well, thank you, Jeff. I appreciate your time. Mm-hmm.